rare earths are involved with everyday life to a very great extent.
How much would a Chinese ban on rare earth material hurt the West? You might be surprised. This is Friday, the 7th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. All you have to do is join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, President Trump says diplomatic efforts with North Korea are going well, even as Pyongyang warns its patience is wearing thin. A controversial raid on the offices of one of Australia's biggest news organizations. All on today's VOA Asia. Chinese rare earth prices are set to climb further beyond multi-year highs, hit following a flurry of state media reports that Beijing would weaponize or could weaponize its supply dominance of the prized minerals in its trade war with Washington. Following Washington's decision to ban Huawei and some 70 affiliates over national security concerns, China's been looking for a high-tech counterpunch to use in response. Some believe that as tensions between the world's two biggest economies rise, Beijing is considering playing what state media have called the ace up its sleeve and cutting rare earth exports to the United States. China is the world's biggest supplier of the minerals that are necessary for a range of tech products, from smartphones to computers and the batteries in hybrid cars. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has said the United States will take unprecedented steps to ensure that the country does not end up cut off from the vital resource. The Commerce Department released a report earlier this week based on a 2017 executive order by President Trump aimed at reducing the country's vulnerabilities to a reliance on imports of the minerals such as uranium, titanium, and rare earth elements. Much like Washington's ban cut Huawei off from key components, a move by China to cut rare earth exports could hit American tech firms hard. But how quickly Beijing is looking to move and how effective a ban might be is less than certain. Lau Kun, chief economist at China's state-owned CITIC Bank International, says it's clear from what's been said about rare earths that it is a weapon that Beijing could use. He says that's not likely that Beijing will reach for it anytime soon, but the situation could quickly escalate if President Trump slaps tariffs on all remaining Chinese goods exported to the United States. To get a better understanding about how Western nations might deal with such a move, I spoke via Skype with Tracy A. Moore, president and CEO of the Canada Rare Earth Corporation in Vancouver.
The restriction of rare earths leaving China would enhance our business case greatly, but the business to get into business of the rare earths takes many, many years. So I don't think there would be an immediate positive effect other than the business case is better. In other words, to create a rare earth mine, for example, takes many years. To create the processing of the concentrate derived from the mines takes many years, special skills, a lot of money, and then a lot of extensive experience in operating the rare earth processing facilities.
Are there any mines either in construction or already underway in Canada or the United States?
In Canada, I'm not aware of any. There's some interesting prospects, but I would say no. And in the United States, I'm aware of one, and that's the Molycorp property, which was acquired by a consortium, including, to a small extent, a Chinese entity.
For those who are unaware, what are rare earths used for?
National Geographic, back in 2011, had an article entitled "The Secret Chinese Ingredients of Everything." And the article is quite general, but the title of the article is quite catchy and encompasses, you know, the general concept that rare earths are involved with everyday life to a very great extent. So telecommunications, electronics, electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, even regular vehicles, polishing powders on lenses, cracking of oil, the tinting on windshields in cars, guidance systems on missiles, laptops, cell phones, the list goes on and on.
How is your business preparing for the possibility of China banning rare earths, at least for, to the United States?
Well, our business focus is to set up processing facilities of rare earth concentrate. So we have a number of initiatives on the go where we have developing alliances with rare earth mines and projects also that where rare earths are a byproduct or even a waste product of other mining ventures. But so the sourcing is one thing, but then the processing is another. And the processing, in our view, is the key to the supply chain. That's actually where China dominates the market.
Well, you being in Canada, that would mean that possibly, at least in the beginning, that you would still be able to get the stuff to process from China, correct?
Well, rare earths are found everywhere. Not necessarily in mineable quantities, but there's a lot of rare earths found, particularly in the southern hemisphere. We're focusing primarily in South America, but also in Southeast Asia for sourcing, as well as Africa.
All right. So as far as percentages are concerned, where would you put the geographic areas that you most use?
For sourcing material, South America is at this time probably 70 to 75%.
That much,
and then there's some Africa situations that are interesting, and also in Southeast Asia.
From where, other than China?
I'd rather not mention those countries for proprietary reasons.
Okay, no, I understand that. How big of a business is yours, and how many people are in competition still?
Our business is our core team is about 12 people. Most of those are not working on a full time basis, but they're advisors and pulled into situations to add their expertise as on an as needed basis. And then locally in various countries, we establish teams of people, which could be anywhere from a few people to maybe 10 or 20 people. I think it's important to understand the supply chain. Companies in the commodity business tend to, you know, explore, hopefully create a mine, hopefully produce a concentrate, and then the concentrate needs to be processed. The processing in the rare earth industry is particularly difficult and unique. And then once the concentrate is processed, you create the oxides, which can be used for metals or alloys. So it's, in our view, it's the processing that's the key. Obviously, finding the material in the ground is important, but for many companies, unless they have a solution for processing the concentrate, they'll have to deal with China for the processing.
What about environmental effects of the processing? In the mining, too, for that matter. Yeah.
Right. It's always an issue, but there are ways of mitigating the situation. But typically, depending on the mineral that's hosting the rare earths, there can be a greater or lesser amount of radioactivity. And that's one of the biggest issues, is how to properly handle and store or deal with the radioactivity, which is sort of a waste or byproduct from the processing, right? And so that's the biggest issue we encounter in establishing rare earth processing facilities. So for example, for the amount of rare earths that, say, would be in a ton of concentrate, it might be something like, say, 50% rare earths. There would be about 5% would be radioactivity, particularly thorium. 90% of the 5% would be thorium, and then the balance would be primarily uranium.
So miners have to be protected, do they not?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Are they in China? Do you know?
I know personally that China is taking environmental aspects more and more seriously. And I know of one refinery in particular that spent millions and millions of dollars and have had to go through all sorts of regulatory, you know, checks and balances to make sure that they can operate.
Tracy A. Moore, President and CEO of the Canada Rare Earth Corporation in Vancouver. U.S. President Donald Trump says diplomatic efforts with North Korea are going well, even as Pyongyang is warning its patience is wearing thin. In a statement coinciding with a one-year anniversary of Trump's summit with Kim Jong-un in Singapore, a North Korean foreign ministry official Wednesday warned the U.S. would be well advised to change its current method of calculation. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from the State Department.
On a stop in Ireland, President Donald Trump said media reports that North Korea's top envoy to the U.S. had been executed after the failed Hanoi summit have been proven false. He also expressed optimism about the apparently stalled talks with Kim Jong-un on denuclearization.
I think that Chairman Kim would like to make a deal, and I'd like to make a deal with him. I look forward to seeing him at the appropriate time.
Exactly 1 year after the agreement signed by Kim and Trump in Singapore, a North Korean foreign ministry official said that if Washington doesn't change its approach, the agreement would turn out to be a mere sheet of paper. A summit this February in Vietnam between Kim and Trump broke down over disagreements on how to match the pace of sanctions relief with steps to dismantle North Korea's nuclear program. Experts say North Korea has been largely silent since the failed Hanoi talks. China may also have been distracted from the North Korea nuclear issue as it continues its trade battle with the U.S., say some analysts.
The main impact of trade tensions between the U.S. and China is to lower the priority of North Korea as an issue on the agenda of U.S.-China relations. And so it's going to be harder to get China to cooperate as much as the United States would like because they're focused on other issues in the relationship.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and his next diplomatic moves remain an enigma for observers. They are also wondering why he temporarily suspended the country's famous Grand Mass Gymnastics and Artistic Performance after attending its premiere this week. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
We are happy you're with us. Police raided the offices of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Wednesday after allegations it had published classified material. The Australian Federal Police said its officers carried out a search warrant on the national broadcaster's headquarters in Sydney and met with its legal team. The network says the search is in retaliation to a series of stories reported in 2017 by the network's investigative journalist that revealed allegations of misconduct by Australian Special Forces in Afghanistan. ABC's editorial director, Craig McMurtry, called the search a very unwelcome and serious development.
We will be doing everything we can to limit the scope of this, and we will do everything we can to stand by our reporters. And as a general observation, we always do whatever we can to stand by our sources, of course. And the other thing I just want to make the point of is this was outstanding reporting. It's 2 years ago. It was challenging content. It was looking at the conduct of special forces in Afghanistan. It wasn't an easy subject matter to report on, but I invite anybody who wants to have another look at that content to take a look at it, because it was clearly in the public interest, and sometimes difficult truths have to be told.
The ABC offices came a day after police raided the home of an editor for News Corp about the report about the government's bid to gain powers to spy on the domestic communications of Australian citizens. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let us hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook, also our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zeynab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.